Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by Patreon listeners like you. If you would like to join their ranks, go to patreon.com/rethebard. That's patreon.com/RIthebard. And follow Sherry on all the various social networks at rethebard. That's RIthebard. And now, from the studios in San Diego, California, here's Sherry.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. The gentleman you were just listening to is our guest today. His name is Everett Robert. He is a playwright, a voiceover artist, an actor, a producer, and a very good friend of the show. He edits the show, he opens and closes it, and we're very happy to have him. This is a recorded broadcast, so please don't call in. During the broadcast, we were talking about Sherry's Playhouse and the dates for the play, and neither of us could think of the dates, so I just wanted to give those to you. For Zoe's Promise, that will be broadcast on March 31st at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And for Joe Cronus, which is the second play, that will be broadcast on April 18th. I believe that's also at 7 o'clock Pacific time. So enjoy the show. Here's Everett. Welcome, Everett, to the show.
Hi, Sherry. It's always a pleasure to be with you on today, I guess. I'm sorry. I'm kind of scatterbrained, it seems like, a little bit.
This is a pre-recording. We're doing it on Oscar Sunday, so all our minds are on the upcoming Oscar show, which, when the show broadcasts, everybody will know what happened.
Yes, we'll know who won the Best Picture and Best Actor and all that.
Who won, who did what, who said what scandal happened, all that stuff.
What?
It's old
yeah.
news.
Well, as I was saying, Sherry, it is always a pleasure to join you here on Chatting with Sherry.
Thank you. We are working on a couple of projects together, and you
yes,
have
we
your own that you're doing. Why don't we start talking about the stuff we're doing together first? We are working on a play called Zoe's Promise. What do you think about the sequel to A Witchy Night?
Oh, it is beautiful. It's wonderful. It's a great little story that takes place over the holidays. And it's been just, it's a refreshing kind of play. It's, you know, it's fun revisiting those characters and seeing a different side of them than we saw in A Witchy Night.
Yeah, that's true. And they're so adorable. It's hard not to fall in love with them, especially Zoe and Eva. They're just so adorable.
Yes.
So the show's going to be on Easter, Easter weekend. It's not on Easter because everybody, you know, I have to schedule actors
yes.
every Easter Sunday, so we had a little negotiation, and we are doing it the Saturday before.
But it's a great show, and it's appropriate for the season, and oh, it's a lot of fun, like I said, revisiting that character. One of the other actors in that, he and I go out and have coffee almost every week, and we were just talking the other day about how much fun Zoe's Promise has been to act in.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Mary's going to be really happy to hear that. I just interviewed her. She's very excited. It's the second time she's heard her characters brought up to life, and she just can't wait.
It's a great, great show, and I can't wait to perform in it again, because Earl, who I'm playing again, he's a fun character to play.
Town home guy.
Yes.
sweet, but typically guyish.
Yes, but fun. I mean, he's very fun.
He is very fun. Very fun. And Henry's sweet, too, but in a totally more elegant way. Different. It's interesting that Henry and Earl are such good friends because they're such different characters.
Yeah. You know, I really want to read some more of Mary's stories about Ava and Zoe and learn more about these characters and their friends and everything like that to see how their circles interact. And because one of the things I didn't get to do in A Ouija Night was actually act with Ray as Henry. And this scene, or this show, my only scene is with Ray as Henry. And it's interesting to explore that dynamic that we didn't know was there until we got the script. And so I'm anxious. I want to read her stories about Ava and Zoe now.
Oh, they're really fun. I've read several of them, and they're highly deep. There's a lot there. There's a lot of layers, but there's also fun at the same time and sweet, and it's just they're really fascinating, and they're always educational. Mary is all about education.
Good. That's awesome.
Yep, definitely highly recommend her whole series.
Well, I'm definitely going to check those out.
Even her coloring books, there's little bits of educational information in there.
That's fantastic. I love it.
The other one we're doing together, we have several that are coming up. In fact, we're doing one of yours, but we haven't really discussed that. And
we need to discuss it when we're off the air sometime.
Discuss it. And we're going to do we're going to be rehearsing while we're rehearsing Zoe's Promises, my play, Joe Cronus. That's going to be in April. It's going to be interesting to be flipping back and forth for those of us who are doing both between Zoe's Promise and Joe Cronus, which are completely different kind of stories. What do you think of the new...
Your new script is fantastic. It's unique. I love the time travel aspect. I love the little homage to a long running BBC science fiction television show who we won't name. But everyone knows about the long running BBC science fiction time travel show. But it's another just really fun.
I guess.
Yeah, it's a fun show. I think that's going to be one of the things that you'll see that listeners will see this season on Sherry's Playhouse is the shows seem to be fun. Not that the other shows weren't fun, but these just seem to have, you know, a more lightness about them, I guess, or a little more sense of adventure. The ones that I, you know, just based off Zoe's Promise and Joe Cronus. That's
been
kind of my
thing. We also need it right now. The world's very serious. What's going on in the world's very serious. It's interesting that we were just discussing off air. I wanted to watch a movie to take my mind off the world, and what it did is centered it right back on it, because even though it's done many years ago, it was really current.
Yeah, no, I've had that same experience not watching movies, but I was watching television and there was a channel that was showing old episodes of a TV show I grew up in the 80s, and I was surprised how relevant some of the messages still were.
Oh, yeah.
About,
like, Golden Girls.
In the workplace. Yeah, Golden Girls. And
everything is still happening right now. Everything. You can watch the Golden Girls and see it in right now going on.
Oh, exactly.
What's the show that you were watching?
You know, I'm trying to remember. It was about 3-4 weeks ago, and it was different. No, Facts of Life. There was a channel that was showing old episodes of Facts of Life, and it really surprised me how relevant some of those episodes still were to today.
You know what's really crazy? It's sitcoms when I grew up from the 70s to up to about the 90s. There was a lot of stuff that was very current and very educational and drawing your attention to what's going on in the world and how to make the world a better place type of thing. So whether you're watching stuff in the 80s, like what we were just talking about, Facts of Life and Golden Girls, or even back in the 70s, something like All in the Family, Barney Miller, another one,
yeah.
Murphy Brown, all these shows are so relevant today because none of those problems have disappeared. They're even worse now than they were when they were being discussed in those periods.
Yeah, it's really interesting to kind of see how that happens and how the world kind of shapes and molds and moves but doesn't at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. And how it's handled and how they do it in such a way that, I mean, they're sitcoms, so the problems are... Basically, there's not cures because they can't cure poor people or homeless or any of those problems, nuclear power or what's going on, corruption in government or any of the things that they were talking about in something like Barney Miller in a half-hour show, but they would end what their dilemma is. So at least you have, okay, there's closure for that particular little tiny drop of the problem that they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You take a little tiny breath of relief.
Yeah.
But it's still here, everything. It's weird. You know, you think we evolve, but we really, it's just recycled. It pops up with a new...
Yeah, you know, you would think that, you know, in this day and age, we would have learned from the mistakes of our, you know, parents, grandparents, that sort of thing. And yet, in a lot of ways, we haven't, and we can only hope that the generation behind us will learn from our mistakes and from their mistakes and do better.
The thing is, and it's what's really sad, is there's an old saying, and my father used to say it all the time, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And
exactly.
I want to add something to that. Those who do not read are doomed to repeat history, because if you don't read, you won't know about the history, so therefore you're going to do it again anyway.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah, I was just talking with a fellow writer earlier today about we had both been judging high school competitive speech and debate, high school forensics competitions at different schools, and how so many kids today have all these activities and they're always so busy. And we were like, do they even have time to read, or are they just given something and told to go out and perform it? Do they really understand what the pieces are saying?
See, and that's something else. How do you perform something if you don't understand what you're performing?
Yeah.
And
it's a good question.
It's a really important thing, too, because... I've discussed it with people that are younger, that some people like are learning about Shakespeare and they're saying,
uh-huh.
Well, I don't understand it, but we're doing Henry V. I'm like, huh? How can you do it if you don't understand it?
Yeah.
That's the point. That's why you're doing it, is to understand it. I mean, if you don't understand it, why are you doing it?
It's like when I was 9, 10 years old, I found in my public library, because I used to go to the library to just hang out because I was that kind of nerd. But I found these, they were almost like comic books. And they retold a lot of the Shakespeare plays in a visual form, in a comic book format. So it was still visual, like Shakespeare is supposed to be performed or to be read. You know, the best way to understand Shakespeare really is to see it performed, because it's written to be a visual medium. You know, a lot of people, unless they're theater people, don't read plays for fun. Plays are written in a very distinct style. And so I think that's another reason people have a hard time understanding Shakespeare, is that it's taught into our schools as literature, but we don't teach kids how to read the format that type of literature is written in. I took college classes where we read O'Neill and Susan Glasspell, some of their plays, but they never bothered to teach these students who were taking an introduction to American literature the format of how to read a play. How, you know, they just assume that you know how to read a play, and plays are a very different format. And so, getting back to what I was saying, I was reading these comics that were telling like it, and Midsummer Night's Dream and Romeo and Juliet. So I was reading Shakespeare, but I was reading it in a way that it was kind of meant to be seen, which is visual, performed in a way. And so therefore, when I got into high school and we read Shakespeare as literature, I knew the stories and I knew how to read the format of a theater script. So it was easy for me, but I can totally understand if someone had never been exposed to theater, to the arts, and had never, this was their very first experience with Shakespeare, why it would be difficult to read and why they couldn't understand it. It's, you know, and it's how we teach it, not what we teach.
That's the thing. They weren't even teaching it. They were just saying, okay, go perform it. Here's the script. Go do it.
Yeah.
And that's my problem with it. It's just like taking Oedipus or one of the Greek tragedies and saying, here, read it and do the play, not explaining.
Oedipus or Antigone or, you know, even the comedies like The Frogs or something like that, and saying, oh, go read it, Lysistrata, and not explaining the context, not explaining the world that the playwrights lived in and the messages they were trying to get across.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense to me. I actually think that one of the fun things when I was taking classes was when we dissected the play and discussed it and took parts of it and what do you think it means? Okay, and what do you think? Now, let's put those two together and see if they can work together and understand where the different characters are coming from and why they're thinking that way, and how to, not only that, but teaching during our readings, when the class was one at a time reading it, how to read it, how to break it down, where to breathe, where to put the period, because there was no periods in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm right there with you.
Out.
There with you. I completely understand. And, since we're talking about theater, should we just go ahead and talk about my podcast and what I'm doing, since it kind of relates to that?
I just want to let everybody know the two plays, Sherry's House, the first one is going to be on March 31st,
And yes, then I was looking the date up myself.
And the second one will be April. I'm sorry, you guys, I'm getting over a cold. April. I will let you know at the end of the broadcast what the
date
is.
It's in April. Zoe's Promise is in March 31st, though, and that's the first coming up. That's the sequel to A Ouija Night with almost the entire original cast. I think we just had to replace one actor, two actors from the original show, I think. Whose characters show up.
Because there was like a lot of parts in the original play, but the main actors are characters.
Of the characters that showed up, in Zoe's Promise that were in Ouija's Night, I think only one has been replaced. Is that right?
Yeah. By me.
So it's a great. You do a great job, Sherry, and it's great to revisit these characters. It's kind of a great reunion of these characters, and great to reunite with these actors again and everything. So it's been a lot of fun.
It really is. And we're going to do a rehearsal tonight. We're going to discuss your podcast now. Why don't you explain what your concept is?
Okay, the podcast is called the 10-Minute Play Podcast, and the concept is right there in the title. What we do is we present to the listeners a new 10-minute, a new play, complete play, in 10 minutes or less. And I think I have one that went, 12 minutes. So, but it was one that came right after the school shooting in Florida and deals with gun violence. So I was willing, I wanted that one to breathe the message of that particular piece ring out. But 10-minute plays are real popular right now in the theater community, plays that run 10 minutes or less. And a lot of small theaters are putting on, 10-minute play festivals and that sort of thing. But there was no outlet for audio plays, or there was no audio outlet for these kind of plays. And so that's what I'm doing, is presenting, listeners the chance. Some people only have, 10 minutes on their commute. They have a very small commute, or only have 10, 12, 15 minutes to, at a time to listen to. And so many podcasts go long. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and so many of the podcasts I listen to, I look and they go, it says runtime 80 minutes or runtime 90 minutes or whatever. And I'm like, I don't have an hour and a half to sit and listen to a podcast. I have a 15-minute commute to work and a 30-minute lunch. And so my idea was to present a complete podcast, a complete audio drama style podcast in 10 minutes or less. And they're fully dramatized. I have music if they need music, sound effects. I'm making it a little different than how we do Sherry's Playhouse, in that I'm pre-recording and layering the sound effects and everything in that way. So if you like Sherry's Playhouse, you'll probably like the 10-Minute Play Podcast, but we're presenting it in a slightly different manner.
There's room for everybody.
There's room. The internet is big enough for everybody.
I interview a lot of people who do podcasts, and someone said, I guess you wouldn't want to interview me because I do an interview show like you do. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I've interviewed people who do interview shows all the time. It's just like Sherry's Playhouse. It's just an idea. It's not like we are inventing the wheel or something. People have been doing radio broadcasts since the 30s. I mean, it's not a new concept.
I've listened to radio dramas my entire life. Some have been old radio dramas that, I discovered on audio tape or CD or that were rebroadcast on National Public Radio, something like that. But I've also have listened to brand new radio style dramas my entire life through different radio stations and outlets and that sort of thing. So it's not a new concept. It's not an old concept. It's just a different style of producing theater.
Yeah. So
and it's
one of the,
there's room for everybody.
It's fun. And that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be. And reaching out to people who don't know about radio playhouses, that don't know theater.
Yeah.
And it's a way to not educate them, that's not the right, entice them into the theatrical side.
Yes. Mhm.
That's what
I always tell people, a lot of people, about the story of my father and Shakespeare. When they go, oh, I don't like the theater, or I don't like Shakespeare, or I don't like this, or I don't like that. The very first time I performed Shakespeare, I performed the Scottish play. The play I will not mention because I record my theater podcast in the same room I'm calling you from, and I don't want to curse my radio theater studio. So
I'm bad luck.
Yes. But I was performing that play, and my dad, up to that point, was one of these. He had been to every play I'd ever done, but he was like, I don't get Shakespeare. I don't understand it. I don't, you know, they talk funny, et cetera. So he came to see the show on opening night, and he came the next night, and he came to the afternoon high school performance that we did because we held it on the college campus where he also worked. And he came to that night's performance. And he came to every performance because he loved the show. Years two later, we were out of town. We were visiting a community. And their college was doing summer stock theater. And they were doing a comedy of errors by Shakespeare. And he said, oh, man, I'd love to go. And my dad was like, that's that same guy that wrote the play you were in. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, let's go. And he went, and he laughed so hard because he, you know, had been exposed and understood it and everything like that. All it takes for most people is to find that one show that speaks to them. And if they, you know, if they don't have 20 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour to devote to listening to one of our Sherry's Playhouse shows, which are great, and I'm not dogging on the length of our shows. I love the long shows. But some people are just like, I don't have that kind of time. You know, maybe they can, you know, tune in to my podcast, listen for 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, whatever they have, and then once they get hooked, they'll go back and find the Sherry's Playhouse shows.
It's also that the plays are different. You know, one thing I go for when I'm doing these plays is I don't want any two of the plays to be the same.
That's why I
sort of want playwrights, and you help me with that because you have a lot of friends that are also playwrights, to bring them in. That was the point of doing the show, is to give people who were, it's a chance to have their work performed. It's not easy to get a show put up.
It's not. It is difficult. It's hard. I've self-produced my own live on-stage shows. It's costly. It's expensive. It's time-consuming. You know, you got to find the actors, you got to rehearse, you got to find the rehearsal space, you got to buy the props, you got to buy the costumes, you got to, being a producer is not easy, it's not cheap, it's, and so as a playwright, you either have to find theaters that are willing to take chances on new plays, which is difficult because, you know, you and I, Sherry, as playwrights, we're also in competition with, you know, names like Neil Simon and Eugene O'Neill and William Shakespeare and, you know, Euripides, and we're up against, you know, shows that people know. And
I'm not in competition.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying, though, when I say competition. We're not in competition, but we are.
Yeah,
and
I know.
The theater wants to bring audiences in, and audiences go to a lot of times they go to shows that they know. So it usually takes a theater that is either established or is willing to take a chance on new shows to put up new shows, and then you have 500, 1,000 playwrights out there who are sending their plays in, hoping for that one spot a year, or that two spots a year. So this is just another way, and the audio format, one of the reasons I love it is it's a little less expensive to mount a show via audio than it is traditionally. And I love traditional acting. I love being on the stage with the lights and in the makeup and everything like that. But it's, as I speak this as a one-time producer, it's not cheap.
Yeah. And also it's a chance for people, everybody who's, well, I'd say about 90% of actors on my show, probably on your podcast as well, are professional or semi-professional. They've worked before on stage.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. But it's not audio performing. It's still there. I mean, people do voiceovers and books on tape and stuff like that. But performing is a different muscle to a book on tape, to a voiceover. It's a completely different part of your talent. So that's the other thing for both of our shows, is that it gives actors a chance to do things that they've never done before, and to act in parts that they would never get cast in on stage.
Oh, yeah. I think it was the second show I did. It's called The Naked Truth. And in it I have, it's a two-hander, you know, a piece with two actors in it. And when I wrote it, I imagined it being done by two actors of similar age, if you were to mount this on stage. It doesn't call for that. It could be done by an older actor and a younger actor. It could be done by whatever. And it ended up being done by a father and son. Even though it's about a prisoner and a guard, it was done by a father and son. And it gave it such a unique, different dynamic that I enjoyed, because there were roles that they wouldn't normally get to play. I'm working on another show that's going to come up from one of the plays, the one that Bill Goodwin, who wrote Terror by Night Train, our Sherlock Holmes play. I'm doing a short play of his. And the script calls for a man in his 20s to be talking on the phone to a man in his 40s. But I'm casting it with myself and Ray, and I'm in my 40s and he's in his 70s. But audio-wise, you don't really know unless you know. Unless you know who the actors are.
Right, and it's not like we're going to have an advertisement. Wait, before you listen into this audio broadcast, I have to tell you that this actor is nothing like the part he's playing. We don't do that. We just do it.
Nope. And that's what's fun about it. And I do the same thing. I don't even put the actors' pictures up on the poster or anything like that yet. I just, you know, tweet out on Sunday afternoons, this week's episode is titled The Naked Truth, or Warning Shots, or whatever play I decide to do. And we just throw it up there and let the winds of the internet take it. And so far, I've got some good numbers I'm happy with for a show that is brand new on the scene. I mean, it is literally a month old. It's an infant in the podcast world.
That's really cool, though. That's really good. I'm happy.
I'm thrilled.
In fact, he's going to do one of mine. I don't know when, but he's going to do one of mine.
As soon as I get the recordings in. I've got one of the three voices in. I'm still waiting on the other two. So I need to sit down with one of the actors myself and record him. He's lacking some of the equipment. But thankful he lives locally, so we can make that work. But as soon as I get the recordings in, I'll piece it all together, and it's going to be, I fell in love with it the minute you sent it to me. It's, what do you think of this? I fell in love with that script. And I was like, I knew I had to do it. It's
Thank
a
you.
Beautiful story. It's a beautiful story. And the way you tell it in just that brief 5, 6, 7 minutes is, it makes my heart.
And that's something that's really interesting because it's a very personal story. It's very personal. It's very family, my family story. But at the same time, it's like, it's not just me. I mean, this is something about all theater. It reaches everybody. If you look at something like Fiddler on the Roof, Fiddler on the Roof, you would think, is a story that only people that are either Russian or Jewish or immigrants or somebody like that. No, everybody relates to it.
Yeah.
Everybody has family. Everybody has fights. Everybody loves each other. Everybody can't stand each other. It's everybody relates to it. And that's what theater is all about.
Yeah. Some people think theater is about entertainment, and it is. And some theater artists are all about, you know, I got to get this message across. And it's a great way to get a message across. But really, it's about telling human stories, whether it's to relay some big message about societal change, or whether it's to entertain, or whether it's to do a little bit of both. At the core, theater is about telling a human story.
Right. That's what it's all about. And that's why it's so important. That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
We can't lose our theater. We can't lose. And like you said, message is really important.
Yeah.
But it can be in a way that's so subtle that you don't even know you're getting it.
Yeah. Now, a couple of my plays that I've produced on my podcast are not subtle. And they're
it's like
very
a hammer messages. Against the head. Boom!
Yeah. And sometimes you need those kind of messages, too. But I have other ones that the message is a little more subtle. And the one I released today, we release on Sunday afternoons at 1:30 Central Time. Is my release date. I make sure I have it ready to go every Sunday by 1:30 in the afternoon, and so it goes out. And the one I released today is it's a one-person piece about a guy arguing with his subconscious. And at the surface, it seems like the subconscious is just shaking him, you know, it's time to wake up, it's time, you know, get up for your day. But as you get into the piece, you realize it's about a little more than that.
That's always fun of it too, because discover what it is. What is it about? What are you trying to tell me?
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like an onion. You've heard that. And you know, you got to take the layers off. Well, when I worked in a restaurant, sometimes we'd get big onions that we'd have to chop and dice and cut and everything like that. But you can also, you know, there's times that someone else has done that work and you just go to the grocery store and you buy diced onions. And sometimes a piece can be, it's the pre-cut diced onions, you're ready to go. You don't have to go through all those layers to get to the meat of the story. And sometimes you got the big yellow onion that just you got to peel the layers off to get to the message inside. And both are valid, legitimate ways of producing theater.
Yep. And the other part that's fun, that's for the actor side, is doing parts that you would never be cast in. Like, the first time that ever happened
yes.
for me was in your play, Murder at Home.
Yes!
I got
Love
to play
that
some...
show. It's a great show.
Yeah, I got to play Femme Fatale. I would never in a billion trillion years be cast on stage as Femme Fatale. But I got to be one. And it was so much fun.
Oh, and you did a great job.
Thank you. I mean, it was so much fun. It was like, oh, my God, I get to play the murderess. I mean, how often do you get to play something like that when it's not your... what your look is.
Yeah. Nope. I totally understand. I've been in that exact same situation. Thanks to some of the audio shows that we've done, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's really cool. We're coming to the end of the show. Do you want to give your website and how people can hear your podcast?
Yeah, they can hear the 10-Minute Play podcast right here on Blog Talk Radio, or they can also find me on Stitcher or iTunes. And I do have links on my website, and my website is emergencyroomproductions.com, or they can follow me on Twitter at EERobert.
And do you have a Facebook page?
Oh, I do. It's facebook.com/emergencyroomproductions.
Okay. Just want to make sure you cover all your bases.
Yep. Just do a search for Emergency Room Productions, and you'll probably find me, my YouTube channel, my Facebook, my Twitter, my all that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Everett. Thanks for coming on the show. I always love chatting
Thank
with you.
Thank you, Gary. Yeah, it's always fun chatting with you about theater and the arts and everything.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by listeners like you. You can support this program by leaving a rating or a review at iTunes, at Sherry's Patreon account, patreon.com/readthebard, or by following Sherry on all the various social media at readthebard. That's RITHEBARD. Once again, that's Re the Bard. RITHEBARD. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.